Most people know how to talk, but very few know how to listen. Because too often we confuse hearing with listening. Let's get some definitions. Hearing is receiving sound. Listening is the conscious sense of hearing to clearly understand what is being said. You see the difference? Hearing is just receiving sound. But listening is the conscious sense of hearing to clearly understand what is being said. Hearing requires no effort. Listening requires effort and some response. The response of thought, answer, or possibly action. As an example, quite often a mother will be slightly irritated as she says to her youngster, "Did you hear me?" And the child will say, "I heard you." She said, "But you aren't listening." Now, there's been a great deal of emphasis placed on effective speaking and writing, but very little on the efficient reception and assimilation of information, direction, or ideas. The result has been an enormous waste of time. In a recent survey of several large companies, it was found that the listening efficiency of the people who were working there was less than 50%, which simply means that less than one half of what was being said was being understood. Now imagine running a large company and only less than half of what is being said is really understood. In one plant where they had a very serious quality control, they had spent large sums of money trying to cure this. There was a young man who worked there who decided to resign. And the personnel manager wanted to talk to him and get his reasons for resigning. And he said that he knew what was wrong at the plant from the very first. Well, the personnel man said, "Why didn't you say something?" He said, "I tried." He said, "I talked to the foreman and the plant engineer, but nobody'd listen to me. And they made me feel like a dummy. I'm going to quit." It's almost a cliche in marital disputes that people can't communicate. It isn't because they can't talk. There's enough of that, probably too much. It isn't because they can't hear, but they're not listening. They're not listening. They're not hearing intelligently. The question arises, why do we fail to understand what we hear? Well, here are some general rules. First, listening is hard work. It takes concentration. Secondly, we hear through a very thick screen of distractions. Distractions both physical and psychological. For instance, the mind tends to dart ahead and anticipates and jumps to conclusions. Then there's another reason, a lack of interest. We're not really interested in what we're hearing, and we become bored, so we really don't listen. Another reason is that we tend to hear only what we want to hear. And then we spend a great deal of time concentrating on the answer we're going to give rather than what we're hearing. Here are the facts. The average rate of speech is about 125 words per minute. But the average person thinks at about 500 words per minute. Average rate of speed, 125 words per minute. Average rate of thinking, about 500. You can see the great disparity here. Here is another contributing factor. Of the 500 most commonly used words, there can be 14,000 meanings. It's incredible. 500 most commonly used words could be 14,000 meanings. This points up the great difficulties in communication. Trying to keep pace with the listener's mind, being sure at the same time that he gets the message. This was one of the problems in Christ's ministry. A lot of people heard him, but very few listened. In Mark 8, verses 1 to 20, Jesus had just performed the miracle of feeding the 4,000. He just had 7 loaves and a few fish, and they'd taken up 7 baskets of fragments. He took a boat with his disciples and went across the sea to Dalmanutha. I don't know how the Pharisees always knew exactly where he was, but they were waiting for him, and they wanted to argue with him, and they wanted to have a sign. And he said, I'm not going to give you any sign. I don't know what kind of a sign they wanted. Looks like they had enough of them. But at any rate, he wouldn't argue with them, and he got in the boat and went back to the other side. On the way back, he's resting, and his disciples are working at the oars and the sails. And Jesus said to them, take heed and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees. And one of the disciples said, what did he mean by that? And the other one said, he said, it's because we didn't bring any bread, because they only had one loaf for them. And so Jesus said to the disciples, didn't you see the 4,000 people? How many loaves and how many fish? And they said, 7 loaves, a few fish. How many baskets did you take up? He said, 7. They said, 7. He said, you saw 5,000. How much did we have? 5 loaves and 2 fish. How many baskets did we take up? 12. And then he said, having eyes, see ye not? Having ears, hear ye not? Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees. They didn't even know what he was talking about. When he told the parable of the sower in Luke 8:18 and told about the various grains, how they dropped in stony places and on places where the thorns choked them out and on good ground, etc. At the close of this, he said, take heed therefore how ye hear. He didn't say, be sure that you do hear. He said, take heed how you hear. Now, in the Bible, to hear is often used for listening to the Word of God with the firm purpose of obeying. God hears our prayers in the sense of answering and granting them. You'll recall that Samuel said, speak, Lord, for thy servant heareth. The desire to do what the Lord wanted him to in 1 Samuel 3:10. 1 Samuel 7:9. Samuel cried unto the Lord for Israel. They had asked him to because they were having problems with the Philistines. And the Lord heard him. Here we have the other implication that the Lord hears with the object of answering. And there came a great thunderstorm and scared the Philistines and they all ran away. So here we listen, or we hear with the idea of following what the Lord tells us to do. The Lord hears in the sense of answering this. Because the eyes and ears are the chief avenues to the heart and soul, the devil places very cleverly designed traps to catch even the most cautious. Let's look at some of these traps. First, we listen to the wrong thing. Those who would not fall prey to Satan's devices must guard well these avenues of the soul. They must avoid reading, seeing, or hearing that which will suggest impure thoughts. The mind must not be left to dwell at random upon every subject that the enemy of souls may suggest. We have an abundance of this, and it's so available in our radios, TV, in the newspapers. Servant of God one time said, it seems as if the enemy is at the foundation of the publishing of many things that appear in the newspapers. We have to be so careful what we read, what we hear, because this is one of the avenues of the soul and the devil will have a trap there. There's another trap. Don't want to listen. Hear, but don't want to listen. Luke 15, verse 1 and 2. Then drew near unto him all the publicans and sinners for to hear him. And the Pharisees and scribes murmured, saying, This man receiveth sinners and eateth with them. The attitude of the Pharisees at that time was similar to those who don't want to understand for several reasons. It may conflict with their lifestyle or their personal ideas. Or they may feel that they won't be held accountable for what they don't know. And so they don't really listen. They may hear, but they don't really listen because they don't want to. There's another trap. They don't take time to listen. We pray, but rarely do we listen. It's supposed to be a friend talking to another friend, or talking to God as we would to one of our friends, but we don't just chatter to our friends and don't listen to them. Not and retain our popularity too long. To listen means an exchange. And we should pray and then take time to listen for God's voice to us. I have always been slightly envious of those who attend churches where they have plenty of time to pray and to meditate. I have walked into these churches where you will see people come in, they'll kneel down at the entrance, and then they'll find their pew, and they'll kneel and pray, and you'll see them not moving their lips, and you know they're listening and contemplating, and then they will sit completely quiet. I wonder if we haven't missed it someplace down the line. We seem to want everything loud and fast. We are deathly afraid of silence. If there is a gap in the program where it's completely silent, someone will say, "What? Who's supposed to do what?" Wouldn't it be lovely, and I wish that this could happen, that we could have a period in our service where we sat completely quiet and let the Holy Spirit speak to us. I remember one time we had a union-wide workers' meeting in Philadelphia. I don't think that there's any singing group, that is to my likes and dislikes, that anywhere approaches a group of Seventh-day Adventist ministers singing. They don't have to be trained, they don't need a choir leader, they just seem to know how to get the right balance between the tenors and the first and second bases, and etc. And it's just absolutely beautiful. We had a lot of ministers there. Pastors had been invited in, so there were more than 100. I was playing for them. And as I was sitting there playing, and I wasn't playing very loudly, I was listening to the beautiful harmony. And so it intrigued me. I started to play less and less and less, and pretty quick I just quit. And I was sitting there just listening and enjoying every bit. It was food for the soul. When some man rushed up to me and pointed out and thought I'd lost my place on the music. I said, yeah, I know. And he was just sure he was being helpful. I said, but listen. He said, what? I said, listen. Listen to the singing. Isn't that fantastic? And he listened a minute and he said, it is. And he went quietly back and sat down. It has to be loud or fast. Why? Why can't it be soft and sweet? Psalms 46:10 says, be still. What's the rest of it? And know that I am God. Do you remember the time when Elijah had run clear down into the lower end of Mount Horeb, getting away from Queen Jezebel? Hid in a cave down there. Remember the time when the Lord came and said, Elijah, what are you doing down here? Did you ever notice just the what led up to that? Here Elijah's in the cave, and there was a great and strong wind went by. That must have been a beauty. Just roared by. But the Lord wasn't in it. And then there was a terrible earthquake. It just shook the mountain, and I imagine he was afraid he might be trapped in there. And the Lord wasn't in that either. And then there was a terrible fire, just a conflagration. The Lord wasn't in that either. And then we're told that after the fire, a still small voice. And that's when God said, "What doest thou here, Elijah?" Not the big winds, not the great earthquake, not the raging fire, but the still small voice. Look at trap number four. Did you ever stop to think that many times we listen for other people? We'll say, "My, that's good. That is good. That is so good. I hope Brother So-and-so is listening because it sure fits him." We don't apply it to ourselves at all. I like the New English Bible rendition of Luke 6:41, which says, "Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and never take a thought for the great plank in your own?" One never truly listens when he's applying what is being said to someone else. Chap number five. We tend to listen to men rather than listen to God. In the early days of church fundraising, we had suggested family goals. It was thought that this was an equitable way to distribute the responsibility in the church, and it was done on a guesstimation type of thing. We haven't used this for a long time, none of us. But we didn't know any better at the time. But I remember very distinctly something that happened one night. I had just arrived at this church, and it was about the second meeting, and I was looking over my notes preparatory to opening the meeting, which was still 20, 25 minutes away, when a man walked up to me and said, "How much would I be expected to give to this?" I said, "I wouldn't have the faintest idea." And he said, "I thought you were an expert." I said, "Not really. I know two people that know what you should give." He said, "Oh, who are they?" And I said, "Well, you're one and the Lord's the other." And he laughed about this. He said, "You mean that?" And I said, "Of course I do. If I were going to give some of my partner's money away, I'd certainly ask him about it first." And so he smiled and sat down. Now, the reason I told him I hadn't the faintest idea was because I had done no initial surveys of the church at all. I knew nothing about the membership. If he'd asked me this about 3 or 4 days later, I would have had some ideas of what he ought to do, what his proportionate share possibly would be. I would have had that, but I didn't. So I could tell him honestly, I hadn't the faintest idea. A couple of nights later, by this time now, I have an idea because I have done my initial surveys. I have talked to the pastor. I know what this man does. I have an idea in my mind of what his proportionate share should be. When this evening, I'm waiting for the meeting to start, but I'm checking over my notes, and I look up and I see the same man. I said, "Good evening." He said, "Good evening." He said, "Are we going to sign something or something?" And I said, "Yeah, something." And he said, "Could I see one?" And I went over to my bag and pulled out a pledge form, whatever it was, and handed it to him. And some people like to look at them to see what was going to happen. And he went over and sat down, and I didn't pay more attention to it. I was standing there beside in front of the podium and looking over my notes when, after a while, he came over and he laid this pledge right across my notes. I couldn't avoid it. So without looking up, I looked, name, address, telephone number, with the Lord's blessing in 150 weeks, I'll do thus. And I looked at the amount and I couldn't believe my eyes because it was over double what I had in my thinking. So referring back to our former conversation, I said, "That must have been some conversation." And he said it was. See, I talked about asking his partner. He said, I went home and got down on my knees, and I said, Lord, have I been selfish? And the Lord said, you sure have been. I don't know how the Lord communicated to him, but he got it. The Lord said, you sure have been. He said, I don't want to be selfish. I love the Lord. I'm going to do something about it. I shudder when I think, what if this man had come 3 or 4 days later when I had an idea what he might do and given him the suggestion? What I would have given him was less than half of what the Lord suggested. You see what I mean? We listen to men rather than listen to God. We're told that the followers of Christ should not wait for thrilling missionary appeals to rouse them to action. If spiritually awake, they would hear in the income of each week, whether much or little, the voice of God and of conscience, with authority demanding the tithes and offerings due the Lord. If spiritually awake, then if we don't really know, what is the problem? We're not spiritually awake. It's that simple. Yes, the quotation comes from Volume 4 of the Testimonies, page 474. That's Testimonies to the Church, Volume 4. If spiritually awake, and for years now, when people say, what do you think I should give? I said, I haven't the faintest idea. That is a sacred area between you and God. And it is. This is the area where if we're spiritually awake, we will know. There's no problem. I have yet to see the person who could come back and say, I still haven't an idea. If he's spiritually awake, he'll know. Number 6. One reason we don't listen, although we hear, is because we tune out God's voice. First, how does God speak to us? He speaks to us through His Word. He speaks to us through the impressions of His Spirit. You'll hear a voice on the right hand or the left hand saying, this is the way, walk ye in it. He'll speak to us through circumstances. He'll speak to us through that tender voice of conscience. It was a week of prayer in an academy. And I had various times set aside where students could come and talk over problems they had. I'll never forget one boy who came. He started out this way. Do you think it's all right for me to kiss my girlfriend? I said, how do I know whether it's all right for you to kiss your girlfriend or not? Why? Is there supposed to be a rule against it? And he said, yes. What happens if you get caught? He said, they put you on social. I said, what's that? You can see how long I'd been out of school. Well, it seems on social you can't sit with your girlfriend in the dining room and you can't go to certain functions of the school, etc. That's on social. And I said, are there people on social? And he said, yes. I said, but you've never been on social. And he said, no. And I said, well, why? And he said, they never caught me. And you don't feel quite right about it. And he said, no. I said, well, how is it that you kiss your girlfriend and you don't get caught and the others do? And he said, well, it's like this. I am in charge of the physics laboratory, and it has big shelves and bottles, all this type of thing in there on the shelves. And my girlfriend takes the class in biology or whatever, and we're back behind the shelves, and nobody catches us. I thought for a few moments, and the thought occurred to me, I don't think that I would be too concerned whether it was right or wrong to kiss your girlfriend. I'm concerned about something else. And he said, what is that? I said, you must have a very, very tender conscience. You have a conscience that's so tender that it says, don't kiss your girlfriend, that's breaking the rules. Now, what would happen if you say to your conscience, okay, I appreciate this, I appreciate you're telling me, but this doesn't matter. This is a little thing. It isn't going to hurt anything. So your conscience says, okay, let's say he doesn't want me to remind him of little things. The conscience says, okay, I'll move up a stage where things are more serious. So the conscience comes and says to you, hey, you better not do this. This isn't right. You say, well, yeah, I appreciate you calling me, and calling my attention, but this really isn't all that important. So the conscience moves up another step and says, well, he doesn't want me to tell him about things right here. These are all right. I said, do you know if you say no to your conscience long enough, do you know what could happen someday? Someday you could walk into a service station, pull a gun, say to the service station attendant, open up the cash register, and when he makes a little move which scares you a little bit, you can stand there and squeeze that trigger and watch his body jerk as those bullets tear into his flesh. And your conscience won't say anything. And he covered his face with his hands. He said, I could never do that. Oh, I said, yes, you could. That's what happens to people that said no to their conscience way down there and kept upgrading it until their conscience no longer spoke to them, because that's the only way God can speak to you. That's one of his major ways. He thought for a little bit and he said, what if my girlfriend doesn't want to stop? Oh man, I said, I've got news for you now. Now I can advise you. If you've got a girlfriend who doesn't respect you because you want to protect your conscience, I said, you run as far as you can and as fast as you can and keep right on going and just keep on going. Because if you ever marry her, you'll really know what hell is. We had prayer. The next day I was coming out of the school, he came out of a side door, he slipped over and I stopped and he said, I told her. And I said, what did she say? And she said she was happy because she didn't feel right about it either. And I said, you want to know something? He said, what? I said, I think you have a real good girlfriend. I'd keep her. I really would. You see, each no response makes it more difficult to hear God's voice until finally it won't be heard at all. The Christian may have excellent hearing, but he won't hear the voice of God unless he's spiritually awake.
This has been another classic sermon from the Archive of American Christian Ministries. International Copyright 2008, all rights reserved. This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette or reel-to-reel in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americanchristianministries.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. You can trust ACM. There is no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with our speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.